5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0, ignition, liftoff.
Hey everybody, I'm Brian Clapp, VP of Content and Engaged Learning for WorkinSports.com, and this is the Work in Sports Podcast. I'm going to date myself a bit here. It was 1996 when I graduated from college. I got offered a job at CNN Sports Illustrated in Atlanta, told I was going to start in 2 weeks, and moved to a city I had never seen before outside of a map. Heck, I'd only been south of Virginia one time on a weekend trip to Disney World. I was a New England kid, Boston kid, and that's kind of where my world was. 7 years after Atlanta, I moved to Seattle, a city I had never seen, a state I had never visited. I had a phone interview or two, flew out for a face-to-face interview, thought this place looked great, was asked to start in 2 weeks. The opportunity was great, couldn't pass it up. I gave my CNN peeps 2 weeks' notice, stopped working there on a Friday, traveled that weekend to Seattle, and started on a Monday. Looking back, that was really dumb. But that's just the way it was. That's what they asked for. That's what they got. 10 years after that, I moved to Denver. 3 years after that, I moved to Philadelphia. And multiple times, I have spoken on this podcast telling all of you to prepare yourself for the inevitable. If you want to work in sports, you will relocate. You will go where the jobs are. You will move on in order to move up. The theory is sound. The jobs in sports are in high demand. There isn't a lot of turnover ahead of you on your career path. So if you start out with the Washington Nationals, you will likely have to move to the Pittsburgh Pirates to advance, or the New Jersey Devils, or the LA Chargers. You get the drift. I'm not being specific here. I'm just saying in general, you'll need to move on in order to move up. Even if you're not working for a team, the challenge is the same. If you start out at GSE Worldwide in Atlanta, you may need to jump to Octagon in order to grow in New York City. The examples are endless. I can do this all day. This past fall, I interviewed Chris Grassi, Assistant Athletic Director for Marketing at Penn State. Prior to Penn State, he worked at Florida State, the Naval Academy, Georgetown, and New Mexico State. Just last month, I interviewed Tim Duncan, Athletic Director for the University of New Orleans. His prior stops? Memphis, UNC Wilmington, Payne College, Clayton State, Northeastern, and now University of New Orleans. So this is settled law then, right? It's fact. Well, not exactly. Enter Exhibit A. Today's guest, Mary Pink, one of the most respected names in college athletics. Mary is the Associate Athletic Director for Marketing at Iowa State, and she has been rocking it in Ames, Iowa for 24 years. So it is not a mandate that you have to move around. It may be likely, but it is not written rule. It is not a fact. If you find the right place with the right opportunities, you can stay as long as you want. For Mary, she's been a part of 24 years of athletic attendance, revenue, and branding growth. And she's going to explain it all right here on this podcast. Here's Mary Pink. Hi, Mary. How are you doing today?
I'm good. Good. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you so much for jumping on. It's so interesting to talk to people in college athletics and learn more about that world because we have a huge audience of people that are interested in that. But before we get into your background in sports marketing and college athletics and life at a major university, I want to go back to your beginning a little bit. Did you always dream of this? Did you always dream of working in sports? And how did this come about for you?
Yeah, I've always dreamed of working in sports, but I actually thought that I would work in sports journalism.
Okay.
And I actually thought I would work in TV. My dream was to be the Robin Roberts of ESPN. So yes. Probably most people that are going to listen to this maybe only know Robin Roberts for her work on Good Morning America. But prior to that, she was one of the anchors on one of the first anchors for ESPN. And I looked up to her and always saw her as someone who did a great job and really admired her. So I thought when I went to college that that was what I was going to do, was work at ESPN someday and be a sports anchor. And along the way, it really wasn't of interest to me. It wasn't something that I really wanted to pursue. And I decided I wanted to stay in sports, but I wanted to figure out what else I wanted to do. And at school at the University of Colorado, they had at the time a sports marketing club. And I was interested in I went to their meeting and I really was very interested in it. It was tied to the athletics department. And we had different people come in and speak to the club, as well as we worked on some projects that trying to, you know, help drive attendance for them. And I really enjoyed that. And then they had some internships come open, and one of the internships was at the Continental Basketball Association, which now is known as the NBA, you know, it's the NBA Feeder League, yeah. G League now. Yep. But back then it was Continental Basketball Association, and they were headquartered in Denver. So I went and interned for them for a summer after my senior year, and I loved it. I really enjoyed sports marketing, and that really got my start into it. But I thought I would work in the pro side, and again, ended up doing another internship in college athletics, and really enjoyed college. So it kind of, like, as I progressed along, things would change, and I just kind of changed along with it. And I think it was just a way to get me to where I ultimately wanted to be, which was in collegiate sports marketing.
What was it that stood out to you about college? So you mentioned that you had these different opportunities. And yes, thankfully, I am old enough to remember Robin Roberts at ESPN, and I remember the Continental Basketball Association. So you and I are on the same plane here. But what was it about college athletics that gripped you? What was it that just made you say, yep, this is the place for me?
I think I liked being able to work on multiple sports and I liked being able to do different things. So, like, I felt like in pro, you know, you might work only as a ticket seller, or you might work only in group sales, or you might only work in marketing or advertising at the time. So it was much more segmented in the pro side versus in college. You'll market several sports. So, you know, one sport might not have as good a season, but then another sport might have a great season, or they may all have great seasons. But it gives you a variety of working with different sports, different student, you know, you're also getting to work with student athletes. And then you're also doing a variety of different duties. So my first job I sold here at Iowa State, I was selling sponsorships. I was doing sponsorship fulfillment. I was writing marketing plans. I was doing some graphic design. So, you know, I was involved in a bunch of different things. So my job was always, every day was something different. It wasn't the same kinds of work every single day. And I really enjoyed that.
Yeah, that makes sense. I will say, you're a bit of a unicorn. I've interviewed so many people in college athletics, and all of them are like, they have seven different schools they worked on, and they always tell you, you got to be ready to relocate. You got to move schools to jump up, and you got to change this and move there and go that way. And you see that enough, and you start to think, okay, that's the way this works. And yet I look at you, and you've been 24 years at Iowa State. Why was it important for you to stay there and develop within the program there at Iowa State? And how is it different, do you think, for you?
Yeah, I think I got in at a time when, you know, collegiate, you know, sports marketing was just really getting started. And when I came to Iowa State, they had just started the marketing department. So it was pretty brand new, and there wasn't anyone above me. And so it was myself and another person that were working side by side. And then for a time that person left. And so I really got in the ground level of being able to build the job around me. And so I've really been able to, you know, add things onto my job as I've gone along. I think that's been one of the great things about being somewhere for a long time, is that you build up your own credibility and you're able to ask for other things to do. So there's things under me that maybe you wouldn't maybe have at another school, but because I've been here so long, I've taken on different responsibilities. And I mean, I've also been lucky because there wasn't anyone ahead of me in the unit in marketing. So I was able to continually, you know, move up and progress in marketing. So I think those have also been parts that have kept me here as well. And there, you know, to be very honest, when you start from the, you know, when I came to Iowa State in 95, a lot of people didn't know the Iowa State brand. We weren't very successful. We hadn't really had a lot of success in football. We had some success in men's basketball, but not at women's basketball at all. And so it was an opportunity to see something start from the very beginning and continue to build it. and to be a part of something. I feel like I've also been very blessed to work for some very good athletic directors that have been very supportive of me and my career, as well as the marketing department. And I feel like that's also as what's kept me here, is just, you know, being a part of something really special at Iowa State, seeing it built from the ground up, working for some good, you know, mentors in the business. And, you know, I think Iowa State is a very special place. So it's kind of becomes that place where you're like, I don't really want to leave, which I know sounds crazy in this business.
No, I think that's great, though, because if you have every opportunity ahead of you and in front of you and it's there for you, well, why would you leave? I agree with that. It seems as though most people are leaving because they feel like the road in front of them is blocked and they're going somewhere else to grow. And yet for you, you had a different situation, so you can lean into that. I think that's really great. I was looking through. This is crazy. Your job description is pretty vast. The expectations are pretty huge. You seem to have your hands in everything: marketing, branding, ticket sales, communication, sponsorship, special events, budgeting, negotiation. It goes on and on and on. My goodness. Strategic planning, event management. Clearly, you can't do it all yourself, but you have your hands in a lot of different things, and you've probably grown over your 24 years taking on new responsibilities. But you have to have a team of people that are helping you execute on your vision. So I ask you, when you look to build your team, what are those traits that you look for? How do you find those people that are going to fit in with you and your vision and work together collectively?
I think the first thing that I've learned now over time is that I think you can teach people how to do a job or jobs, but I think it's, you know, do you have those special traits to want to work in college athletics? Are you doing it for the right reasons? You know, are you really, you know, do you, you know, and do you have the, like, I think in the way I look at it now is like, I want people that fit the culture that is here within the athletics department and within our unit, in that, you know, you enjoy what you do. You have a good attitude. You don't mind working the extra things that you need to work. You make the job fun. You know, so you come to work and you try to have fun each day and you work hard, but you can play hard too. You kind of have a good balance in that. And I think, and then the willingness to learn and to get the job done, because I think, you know, yeah, there are days that, and I tell people, I'm like, there's parts of my job that I don't like love still doing, but I still do it because that's just what's a part of my job, you know, because I know there's other great parts of my job that far outweigh those things that I have to do. And so I think it's being willing to do all parts of your job in order to keep going. So, I mean, when I say I've experienced on a lot of those things, you know, a lot of it's now there's staff and other units that do different things. When I first came here, we were just a super small staff and we didn't really have any budget overall. And so it was really like all hands on deck. I mean, everybody had to help out with everything, it seemed like, because we just didn't have the numbers. And now as we've grown over the years, it's, you know, obviously there's a lot more staffing, not more staff and a lot more people to help with different areas. And so I think it's also just being able to, you know, do the things you need to do, allow them to do the things they need to do, and work as a team.
So you lead a team, you have people working underneath you, and everyone that I interview in always talks about how important it is to find and develop leaders, but they so rarely reflect on themselves. So I ask you this, how would you describe your leadership style, and why do you think that works so well with your team?
I think that my leadership style is to try to help teach people in terms of the things that, you know, things that have helped me to be successful in my job, whether it's, you know, just making sure they know, like, I think a lot of times when people come in first to a job, there's a lot of things they don't know. So how can I help them? I think is like the first thing I look at, like, what can I do to help them as a boss? You know, is it helping them to learn things they don't know in the position? Make sure they kind of have all the information to do their job, be there to help answer any questions. So like if you're newer staff, some people I sit down and meet with every week and we, you know, we go through what they've got going on, make sure they, I answer any questions or help give them guidance or any advice. And then I also make sure I'm helping give them any tools to do their job. But then I also let them do the things they need to do and learn, because some things I had to learn by doing and either, you know, making a mistake or doing it really well. You know, I had to figure some things out on my own. But I think, and I tell myself, I'm like, hey, you know, you got to try different things. And if you're trying and it doesn't work out, that's okay. But just try stuff, you know, because then you'll find out if it works or it doesn't. So I think it's being a supportive boss, while also not being really micromanaging, because I know I didn't like that, and I don't like that. Yep. So I try to remember, you know, how I would want to be treated in terms of getting the responsibilities and the job done.
So we listed off some of the responsibilities you have that come under that umbrella of marketing, you know, branding and ticket sales and communications, all these different things. And so I'm looking for a little bit of your guidance here with your experience. Young people, I speak all across the country in different college campuses, and you talk to a lot of young people who say, I want to work in sports marketing. And that makes great. That's great. Awesome. Lots of great fun opportunities there. But should somebody in this role who's in college and is trying to work in sports marketing, should they try to become a little bit of a jack of all trades, learning a little bit of everything? Or do you think it's smart for them to really lean into one thing and become a really subject expert in that field and a master of whatever it is, special events or branding or ticket sales? Like, do you think it's... Which do you think is the best approach for somebody getting started in this side of the business?
Yeah, I would suggest, you know, leaning in and learning, you know, what your real interest is. And I tell people, you know, we've had some people that come as a student, they come in and they intern and they're like, you know, marketing's not for me. And I say, you know what, that's good. You're finding that out. Like, go and do internships and figure it out. So you know, if you're really interested in sports marketing, then go and do a marketing internship in intercollegiate athletics, or if it's for a pro team or whatever you want to do in sports, but lean into that and learn about that and get that experience. Because I've also seen where people go in and they're like, oh, I interned for a month in compliance and I interned for a month in communications, and then they don't really have any depth of experience. So then when they get done and they want to find a job, let's say it's in marketing, well, then they're like, well, you haven't really worked that much in marketing. Right. So I'm going to struggle to hire you for that position, whether it's a full-time internship or a full-time job. So I really think leaning into what you're interested in within sports marketing and really getting some good experience there.
That makes sense. In 2012, Iowa State won the Marketing Team of the Year Award from the National Association of Collegiate Marketing Administrators. It's a mouthful. Lots of competition for an award like this, I'd imagine. And it was a while back, but I still want to know, what was it that made your program at Iowa State stand out from the crowd? What do you remember about that time? And what kind of specific things were you guys doing that really stood out in the time and was kind of leading the way?
You know, that's a good question. I think it was just a number of different things. We've had at that time ticket sales success in football, men's basketball. We've had it in women's basketball, probably our top three sports at that time. And I would say volleyball, we've had it in those sports. And you know, really had either maintained or grown our attendance in those sports. Especially for us in football, we had grown at a time when, I don't think, if I look back, if I remember, we had not been successful on the field necessarily from a historic standpoint. So I think the previous 5 years, we had not had a winning record, or if we did, it was, you know, it was maybe 6-7 or, you know, 6-6 or whatever. I think it was 6-7. So, you know, we had either maintained or grown our attendance numbers over that time. And so I know that that was one thing that people looked at. You know, we have been historically in the top 10 in attendance in women's basketball. And again, we haven't gone to like Final Four. We've never been to a Final Four in women's basketball. We've been to one Elite Eight and a couple, I think, some Sweet 16s. So we've had a number of NCAA tournament appearances for women's basketball, but you know, we have maintained, you know, a top 10 to top 5 attendance in the country, So I think, you know, and we've always tried to be innovative and try different things. So I think that's also been another thing that I think helped us in terms of being successful and getting the award.
So trends and approaches change pretty quickly. What you did back then may not have the same impact now. Obviously, social is much bigger now than it was then or even earlier. How do you stay agile and fresh and come up with new ideas and keep pushing things as a marketing department? That seems to me like it has to be the biggest challenge. You come up with these great ideas, you do these great things, you're getting people to show up, or you're engaging the community or whatever you're doing. And then it's like, all right, got to come up with something new, right? I mean, how do you do that?
I read a lot. I read a lot of different stuff. I get a number of different things, you know, news articles emailed to me each day. I go online and look at different ideas. I go to conferences and get ideas, like the National Sports Forum that you and I were just at.
That's right.
And I pick up a couple ideas from there. I try to talk to different people and say, you know, hey, what are you working on? What do you think has worked? What do you think hasn't? So I really do try to stay on top of trends, and they're not even always in sports. Like, one of the big trends that I've really seen the last 2 years now has really been influencer marketing. And so we tried to do some things around influencer marketing with our students, with social media, and really trying to get students to more engage with our and attend our events. So that was one thing we've looked at. You know, we've really tried to look at another thing that we've really tried to keep going strong is like our kids club, and really made a big point of emphasis, because I think as people are obviously trying to generate revenue, you know, some fans are getting left behind. And, you know, and I think it's really important to keep engaging youth. And getting to attend your events, because those are your future ticket buyers down the road.
Yeah, it's
so
true.
Things like that. It's kind of trying to really, I think reading is really important, and looking out for trends.
I like that too. Looking outside of your normal sphere in order to get ideas from outside of in other industries or what have you. I, as a writer by trade, I have people ask me all the time, well, like, what sports books do you read? And I'm like, to be honest with you, to get inspiration, I'll read Hemingway or something. You know, you go outside sometimes to break your mold and see things from a different lens. And I think that's important.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, I was telling somebody, I was like explaining, we have a new merchandise provider, and I said, wow, you guys should really get on these. They were asking me like about, you know, what should we be doing to support, you know, sell more Iowa State merchandise. And I said, influencer marketing, it's really big, yeah. Like outside the realm of like all these brands, Nordstrom, Target, et cetera. They're all using influencers to help sell merchandise, and it's working. And it's so I'm like, that's really a big trend now. So what do you do with that in the sports merchandise world?
Yeah, I'd imagine too, you have a great alumni group that you could probably tap into too, that are influential people out there that you can bring back to have a positive message about the program. I'm sure that you can tap into a lot of different avenues to promote Iowa State, and that must be kind of fun to try new things. And like you said, experiment out there.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Yeah. I love it. Every day is a new challenge.
Yeah. So I'm originally from Boston, which means I am an obnoxious Boston sports fan. And I was watching some Iowa State game a while back, and I heard during a football game, the student section singing Neil Diamond's iconic Sweet Caroline, which is a song bellowed night after night at Fenway Park, my home state. And I looked it up just out of curiosity to see how it happened. And it was attributed to you, that you were the one that kind of made this happen. Is that true?
Yeah, and it was actually by accident. So I can't take full, like, 100% credit. But again, I used to do the music for our games for football, and I was trying to think of ways to engage our fan base and, you know, get them. We haven't had a lot of winning until more recently in football. And so, you know, we don't have a lot of traditions at the time we didn't have a lot of traditions. And so when our new athletics director, he's not new anymore, but Jamie Pollard, you know, he was really like, hey, let's try to figure out what new things we can do and whatever. So I was like trying to experiment with like, how do I get people to engage with our, you know, at our football games and get into them. And so I was like, okay, if I can get the students going, maybe that will help get everybody else. So I played Sweet Caroline, and very interesting. They sit across from where I was seated for doing the music, and all these students just started singing and swaying to the song. And I was like, okay, this is like working. But it is also, what's been very interesting is then it became, you know, so then I kept playing it as it went on, you know, at different times during the game, you know, once per game. And then people would, it was very polarizing because there were some very much purist fans that were like, well, you shouldn't play that during a football game. That's not a football song.
Oh, jeez.
You know, you don't play that during football. And, but then I'd be like, but look at all these students. I mean, you know, and then fans would get going because they'd see the students were doing it, you know, so it kind of became a thing. But, and then we were like, okay, we're only going to play it in the third quarter between the third and the fourth period, or first, between the third and the fourth quarter when, if our team is winning or we're tied and have momentum. So we did that. Well, then, you know, so it's just kind of gone along now, you know, and then we would play it between the third and fourth quarter. And then if we lost the game, people would be like, well, we lost the game because we played Sweet Caroline.
Oh,
and I'm
geez.
Like, oh my gosh, you guys, because yeah. we were always this team that didn't win those big games. You know, it didn't feel like it. So now we play it a lot more if we win a game, like at the end of the game, you know, our fans and are celebrating and it's a celebration song. Or we played at pep rallies is another place we play it as well. So it's kind of become more of a celebration than we play it like specifically during the game like we started. But that was sincerely by accident. Like I just was trying different things to see what would work.
But isn't that part of what makes college athletics so special? Is I find when I go to college games, you get a different fan experience. You get a different level of community and intensity and just this, like, I don't know, it's just a vibe about it. And isn't that part of it? Like you hit a magic button that day and it struck and the crowd is engaged with it. And it just is magical moments. And it's like, you want to capture that over, I mean, you wish there was a way to plan that out and you could make it happen again. Right. I mean, isn't that something you're just special that you want to, I don't know, capture and keep playing back over and over again?
Oh, no, I totally agree, because you have the students, you know, those are some of the biggest catalysts for getting certain things going. Is if they buy in or if they're into it, then they provide the energy to the rest of the crowd. And that's something, you know, you don't have a natural student section at a pro game unless it's right. a university night or whatever. But you know, in college, you have those people that are very, you know, they're all into the game and they can provide that energy and excitement for the rest of the fan base.
Yeah, that's definitely a special part of college athletics. So you've won national awards, you've managed huge budgets, you've developed social media campaigns, you've led huge teams. But what's the part of the job that excites you the most? There's so many different aspects to your role. What gets you fired up? What part do you really just look forward to doing?
Wow. There's a lot of different things that I like. I've always loved trying new ideas because I think it presents a new challenge to see if that idea is going to work. So I love in this job that I have the opportunity to try different things and see, you know, if we can sell more tickets or we do something that the crowd really likes and they just really enjoy and you see the response. I mean, that's the great part about my job is that, and in this unit is our job is very public. So if we do something at a game, you know, we may find out if that works or if it doesn't, you know, or if you put a ticket promotion out and people just really buy into that ticket promotion and it all comes together and fans have a great time. Like you can see the results of your work. So that's probably one of my favorite is just being able to see the impact on our fans and the enjoyment that they get out of the experience. And I think too, like, you know, I bleed Cardinal and gold. So it's, you know, I feel very fortunate. I think another part is that we have amazing fans here. Like we don't have pro teams. We when I got here, we were really the redheaded stepchild to the University of Iowa, and we really didn't have a lot of people coming to our events. And so I think it's that challenge every day of like, you know, initially was like, how do we get people to come to our events? And now it's like, how do we get them to keep coming back? Like, right. What's the thing that's going to keep them? Because it can't always be about wins and losses, because you, as a marketer, you can't control that. You don't know. I mean, yeah, is it great if they win? That's awesome. But you can't always control that. So what are the things you can control and make that difference in the game day experience? Or, I mean, you're in the memory making business is what I look at it as. What part of my job is like, you're helping create those special memories of those people that maybe their first game they ever went to as a kid, or their memory with their family, or their, you know, their dad or their mom, or, you know, their first time meeting Cy and getting a picture with, you know, the mascot. It's, those are the things you remember is attending those events, and people still talk to them about. It's the craziest thing just to hear how, you know, you were sort of maybe involved. I mean, you weren't obviously playing on the court or on the field, but you're involved with it. So it's kind of a cool thing.
It is. And I know exactly what you mean, because I think every sports fan in the world remembers their first game, their first moment. And I like that you're in the memory making business, and I'm totally stealing that. I'm going to use that in the future. I hope you don't mind.
Yeah. Hey, go for it. Go for it. For sure. Have at it.
Awesome. So we'll finish up with this, and I appreciate so much of your time, Mary. And I know you have the work to get back to you, so I really appreciate it. I know our audience is going to love this, and I thank you for carving out a little bit of your day to share more of your world with us. But we'll finish up here. To be in sports marketing, clearly from this conversation, you've made it clear you need to be, you have to have flair for the creative, right? But you also, you have to be able to execute on the ideas, and you have to be able to track data to know if an idea worked or not. How important is it for someone who wants to be in marketing to be more than just creative?
I tell people, I think it's very important. I think, you know, if you want to get ahead and be successful, and I've tried to talk to some staff here, you know, and tell them, like, when you put your resume out, if you look at it as you're looking for your next job, or you're, you know, maybe you're coming from a full-time internship, what I look at when I look at a resume is your numbers. You know, how much did you grow in attendance? How many tickets did you sell more, or did you grow the attendance, you know, from the previous year? And so I look at, I believe that attendance and ticket sales are just as important. And now they're going to become more important to that athletic director who's trying to drive more revenue, or that coach that's like, well, I want to get in the top 10 in attendance because that's going to help me get these recruits. And so it is a very, yes, is game day experience an important part for sure. But at the end of the day, you can't say I created the best. I told my staff recently, I said to somebody, I said, you know, you can't put on your resume, I created the best intro video. Like, that's right. Not, that's just objective. Like, that's not numbers driven. That's just, you may know that, like, in your mind, you created and the fans like it, but that's not why an athletic director is going to hire you. An athletic director is going to hire you, or a staff person, because, like, wow, like, I see this person can actually drive attendance and get people there and think creatively about how to do that. So I view those things as being very important going forward. So I think thinking about when you get into a position, whether it's, you know, assistant director or, you know, full-time intern, is what is your resume going to reflect when you're done? What do you want it to say? And how do you think that's going to help you get the next job? So kind of thinking about those things.
All right, I lied. I have a follow-up question. So you said a bunch of times, and I love this, is that you guys have grown attendance. And you, when you started, it was not a marquee event, and now people are coming and showing up and showing that data. And I love that, because I tell people all the time, on your resume, you got to give me some data to tell me, what have you done? Have you changed? Have you grown Twitter followers? Have you increased revenue? Have you increased attendance? Give me something. And so I want to ask you, though, how? I know that it's probably a collective thing, but how do you grow attendance? I mean, you're in Ames, Iowa. Like you said, there's not a lot of competition. There's probably, other than University of Iowa, there's no pro teams or like that. But how do you engage? How do you re-engage a fan base and get them to want to be there and develop a community? And like, how do you really do that? It sounds so impressive to say that you've grown attendance, but it's still like, well, how do you do it?
I think we had to really try different things. I would say one of the big things, and I spoke about this at the National Sports Forum, is just we've really invested in our kids club, which I know for college and even pro side, a lot of times kids clubs are kind of an afterthought to people. They're like, oh, I'm going to have that graduate assistant or, you know, whoever manage the kids club. And for us, we really looked at it as, hey, this is an opportunity to build our youth, our fan base, from the youth and the families into attending our events. So as an example, for us, from a football perspective, you know, we were, when I got here, we were maybe averaging, let's say, 20,000 a game, or, you know, maybe it was 25,000 a game for attendance. And we were like second to last in like football record. Like, I think Ohio U and us were tied for like the worst football programs in the country in 95. And so I was like, we gotta, you know, we started doing some kids club stuff, starting with women's basketball. And I can't take credit that we started it. It was our women's basketball coach wanted to start it. But then we said, hey, we got to bring this into all of our programs. So we started doing it for football. And we said, okay, let's give them every home football game, except at the time it was our premier game against Iowa, or at on the other seasons it was Nebraska. They right. couldn't get in. The kids couldn't get in for those games only. But it, otherwise, it was, you got in for like five or six games for like, I don't know, it was like initially like, let's say $25 right. for a kid. Now it's like $59. But then their parents could also either buy tickets, or now they can buy a season parent pass and sit on these hillsides with them. Well, now it's an opportunity. Even if you go to three games, you know, two games, whatever, you know, you're still getting those kids in to start experiencing that type of atmosphere and get engaged with the product. And now you're building the lifelong fans. And I think once we started doing that, it took some time, but it really helped build our fan base when we weren't necessarily winning, because these people were used to coming to games and tailgating with their families, going in and experiencing the brand and being involved with game day. So I think it was, you know, we're looking at effective pricing. So we tried to we don't have a lot of different price points, but we tried to be like, okay, we're going to have our donor pricing. We also looked at pricing, like, how do we effectively get in the fans that maybe, you know, don't have a lot of money, or they're maybe bandwagon fans. So we've got to make it price effective for them to buy a season ticket, or at one point it was mini packs. And we were starting an escalator, like, let's start with three games, and then the next year we're going to market to them, you know, a season ticket. Or let's get them in the kids club, and then eventually as they become lifelong fans and they, you know, go to school here, and then eventually they're, you know, adults and they're buying season tickets with us. So it was looking at how do we have a different price points to get different groups of people in. I think the other things we did were try to do different ticket promotions for different games. When not everybody was doing it at the time, we were like, hey, let's do a flash sale, you know, which now a lot of teams are doing it. But yeah. at the time we were like, hey, let's do, you know, $14 tickets for 14 hours, you know. And we were seeing, and I'm grateful our athletic director didn't look at everything like everything was a number. And they have seen some ADs look at that way, like, oh, we have to get a certain revenue number. Well, yeah, but you're going to have both. I mean, you have to really think about your mix. Like, yeah, you might want to hold your revenue, but then you won't have the attendance there.
Right.
Well, then people don't want to go to an unfull stadium, or, you know, not as full a stadium. They want to go and it's like rocking and there's a lot of people there. And, you know, so you have to have a kind of a good mix of like knowing that, you know, we might give up some revenue on one side, but we're going to get fans there, and then they're going to be exposed to the product, and hopefully we're going to win, and then they're going to come back again. So that was kind of one of our strategies, is like, let's look at having some effective pricing to try to get our fan base into. And then obviously we had to look at what was our game day experience like. So we made some changes when Jamie Pollard came in, and, you know, I said, hey, we got to start, you know, leading some more cheers and chants and developing those. And we got to have fireworks. And, you know, I mean, some of these aren't necessarily novel things, but I think you have to be willing to try different things. And that's what we were willing to do, was say, hey, we got to just try this new idea. Like, it may sound crazy, but like, let's try it. We don't have anything to lose. So, we spent a lot of time experimenting with ticket pricing, with trying to go after different groups of people. I think the other thing, and we were just lucky, but we never really sold it before, was we have a lot of parking around our stadium. So we try to look at the game day experience outside the stadium for football. You know, people love to come and tailgate here. So, okay, how do we get fans in to really start tailgating initially? And we started to work on building that up. How do we get, you know, our football coach out more in the community, or get him marketing him more, trying to sell him more. So there's no one specific thing, but I definitely would say pricing was definitely something. I'm willing to have some discussions on that. I think definitely looking at your game day experience.
Yeah.
What are you doing as far as music, your band, your in-game, like how is the flow of the game? How is that all coming together? And then I think obviously, how are you branding your program? How are you marketing and selling your program, and you're utilizing your coach and those kind of things? So I think, and then obviously the other part is the kids club. I mean, we have a lot of people that say, in fact, we had a football player who just graduated this year, but he said, I remember when I was in the now junior cyclone club as a kid.
I love it.
I remember sitting on the hillside. And then he's like, and then I remember being recruited, and now I play football here at Iowa State.
That's
and we
great.
Have many kids that talk about that. And that's huge now, especially when you have, you're competing with TV and Xbox and phone, and you have to get kids in now to experience something. Or, you know, I'm not saying that them wearing, seeing it on TV, that helps, but they really need to attend an event to really become really immersed in that brand.
That is a fantastic answer, and it's spot on. I love the long play with the kids club. I'm sure you have kids from that original kids club who are season ticket holders now, and that's a really cool thing. That's a testament to your longevity at the program too, as you're able to see a lot of these programs come to fruition, which is really nice too. Mary, thank you so much. Yeah. This has been so great to hear from you and to have you as a part of our show.
Thank you so much for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Mary. I always like to push back a bit when someone says, you know, oh, we've had years of attendance growth. Well, I want to know why. What did you do? What was your strategy? What worked? How did you get there? What did the last person do that didn't get this kind of attendance growth? What did you do differently? Like, I'm always wanting to push for that little extra bit. And I'm glad Mary indulged me with my questions and really crushed it with her advice. So thanks to everybody for listening. Lots of great tips in here. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast, share with others. We sure as heck want to keep growing this thing. All right, get back to work.